Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 17th of September 2015, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought arriving at and leaving the station of freedom. We're coming to you from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, where we say with one wise man that God so loved the world that he did not send a committee. And here from Houston, Texas, is that great unteacher himself, the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Mr. Michael Williams.
Good evening, Barris Bartlett.
You didn't give me time to insert all the cheers and the from the people in the chat room, mate.
Blah, blah.
I know. You hate adulance.
Oh, no. I love it. I'm just tired of it.
Yeah, it gets so I guess you feel like you feel like the Beatles now, don't you, or someone?
It really is. It's like, come on, stop bothering me.
So how are you, buddy?
I'm marvelous. I've been a full month on my CPAP machine, and
back to the C body
pack. I'm going to have to talk about it for a while. This is
your new sleep partner.
Huge life changing thing for me, and a public service announcement again. Please watch out for those that might possibly. If you snore loud, you are suspect. My life has so drastically changed.
How long have you been on it?
A month now.
I've heard it only lasts for 5 weeks.
And Dr. Leslie up in Canada told me 6 months it would take for my organs to adjust to the new life. So he says there's going to be 6 months of really wonderful changes. I guess your body needs oxygen.
Who'd have thunk?
So last night I slept 9 hours without getting out of bed.
I'll go to the ant, thou sluggard. I'm quoting God in Proverbs.
Goodness gracious. So I'm ready to do a show.
Well, okay, I got a call this week from Mel Martin, and he tore strips off me, which is the only way he knows to talk down to anyone. I mean, the guy, I tell you, I don't know why you go to these Gainesville, Georgia conferences. And he let me have it left, right, and center because we did not mention the Gainesville, Georgia conference last week.
Oh, wow, should have.
Actually, it's going to be next week, but I didn't mention it last week. So would you like to tell people what on earth you're doing over there?
I'm going to Georgia.
Are you going to buy some boiled peanuts?
Well, bald.
Bald peanuts, boy.
Bald peanuts. No, one of the most detestable things on earth is bald peanuts.
I tell you what they do have.
What they got?
They got the best pizzas that I have ever eaten in the USA.
Wonderful. I look forward to that.
If you guys up in New York and Chicago do not go to this conference, you just plain don't care about life.
Man, I'm telling you, my soul has been coming alive with some wonderful things. I've been spending a couple of days, getting trapped in my Strong's Exhaustive and my vines. And
oh, boy.
And
it's going to be deep, I can see.
There's just some things that are just really fantastic. I didn't realize the difference between authority and rule and power. These are terms that, the King James Version uses a lot. The Greek words for those are exousia, authority, and power is, in most cases, dunamis, unless it's a place where it has been translated as exousia. And then the term that we're going to compare it to is the term rule. And Paul talks about all of it being put down as all rule, all authority, and all power. Those three things, Paul said, would be completely be subdued as a result of the work of the cross. I'll give you just a tidbit of it. At least 95% of the time, authority is carrying the connotation of there to bring about something good. Rule is there to oppress. So the title of my conference, I haven't settled on just yet, is whether or not we're going to use Mary's quote directly, "My soul doth magnify the Lord," or "Oh, magnify the Lord." The condition of the soul is the defining factor as to the condition of life on this planet. The condition of the spirit is constant, and it's there to draw on at any time. So I'm going to be teaching on how the soul still does, and maybe more so now, magnifies the Lord. So anything that's of the spirit is going to be magnified or demagnified through the soul, depending on what the soul thinks, what the soul understands. But the soul is the realm where that which is spirit is magnified. The only thing spiritual about me is that steadfast, absolute core of my being that is God Himself. Other than that, I don't spiritualize anything. And the less I spiritualize, the more stable my brain becomes, the more stable my outlook becomes, the more stable my ability to handle the comings and goings of life becomes. My soul is magnifying the Lord, Barris. I am thrilled on so many levels. The stability that the gospel gives us to begin to interface spirit with soul. There is nothing else that interfaces spirit with soul except the gospel.
Okay.
So you didn't like that, huh?
Well, the answer was a whole lot longer than the question. I'm not sure what to make of that.
So you're not used to that yet?
Still getting used to you, mister. We've been talking, of course, about the September Southeast Conference to be held in Gainesville, Georgia. Mike will be teaching there 7 p.m. on Friday the 24th, Saturday the 25th at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m., and Sunday at 10 a.m. Donations will be accepted at all meetings. There is no charge for attending, though. Location is the Inman, I-N-M-A-N, Inman Perk Coffee Shop at 102 Washington Street, Southwest, Gainesville, Georgia, 30501. And you're going to meet some great people there, really, truly great people. People you've heard named on the podcast quite often, and other people who you've never heard but are still people who are just wanting to get this gospel out and loving every moment of it. Now, today, mate, I wanted to share with people how we do this show. And I thought that it would be fascinating because I know that we've got a lot of people who are interested in these things. Well, not a lot. We have some. And frankly, 2 or 3 hours ago, I made this decision because I realized that our antinomian discourse was actually going to take another week of research. I want to be so careful as to put out only information that is correct. And the more I research this antinomian topic, Michael, the less it makes sense.
Well, let's show people how this show is made by doing this, one of the things. What is it that you are running into that is causing you to delay the show? What is it you thought, and what is it that you're having questions about now?
Well, originally I thought antinomianism, I knew it was a word. I don't know where I first discovered it. It was some years back. I remember when I first came to America, I was pastoring at a Baptist church in a city, Nashville, right in the hood. I mean, it was in the second worst hood for murders anywhere in Nashville. And for those of you who are wondering, it was in South 6th Street, right off Shelby there in virtually downtown Nashville, just across a bridge actually from downtown. And I fed homeless people there. And at one stage, the pastor he was a guy that told me, I walk in the room like a leader. And I'm saying, what am I supposed to do? Should I take my shoes off, my clothes? I mean, I'm just walking in like me. And he found that rather confronting. But he asked me two questions. He said, and this is after he got to know me, but he said, are you a praetorist? And I didn't know what a praetorist was. I really didn't. And I had to go. And I said, I don't believe so, sir. And it, as it turned out, I wasn't. But anyway. And the second question he asked me maybe a month later was, are you an antinomian? And I said, by this time I was used to it, and I said, no, sir.
Not me.
Oh, man. What amused me, or should I say what amazed me, was that these people who believed in the Lord like I did and pretty much believed in the stuff that I grew up with, they believed stuff that was so different as well. It was like, mm-hmm. how much did, wow. It was, so that's the first I ever heard of it. And then as it came to me just a couple of weeks ago, as I somebody sent me a message, I researched the topic more thoroughly and discovered that it was an invention of the Reformation.
Interestingly.
Namely, it was the invention of Martin Luther. And so for 1,500 years, for 1.5 millennia, for 15 centuries, that's a long time, by the way.
That's a long time.
For that long, Christianity got on really perfectly well without any concept of antinomianism. So I was forced to look at why this was important, and it turns out that the moment you turn left or right from do this and you'll get that, do good, get good, do bad, get beat, the moment you divert from that, now you're into grace and now you have got to put the brakes on because you're giving people a license to sin. Like they didn't sin already great without a license.
Antinomianism is lurking at the door.
So the reason I'm researching further is because as I go into the Greek, I'm finding more curly speed bumps. As I go into Vines and Strong's and Kittle's and every single commentary, what I'm finding is it's exactly like the Santa Claus and the Boogeyman.
It was created for control.
And manipulation, yep. Absolutely.
Well, this is a huge find. I want to encourage everybody to... do stay tuned. Barris is putting a lot of research, a lot of heart, a lot of soul into this. And this is a very important subject for the gospel revolution. I remember the first time, not the only time, that I had someone take that position with me that I was antinomian. I'd never heard the term before. I asked what it meant. I'm not like Barris and just keep my mouth shut and stay out of trouble. I said, what does that mean? So I was explained, and I told them I was not against God's law at all. Of course, that didn't work because you've got the label. Now you got the label, you're stamped, you're labeled, you're put away.
Yeah.
The reason for labels is to be able to marginalize and dismiss.
Oh, say that again.
The reason for labels is to marginalize and dismiss.
48:10. I've got to make a note of that. That's going to be a prologue.
And it doesn't make any difference what you say. Once you've been labeled, you're labeled. It's a dastardly trick when you start labeling people. It's kind of like calling people names. If you label somebody, the debate's over.
Well, it seems to me that it is a very human thing to label people because it gives us the opportunity to analyze society or our culture along specified or given lines that allow us to not necessarily dismiss or manipulate people, but in order to find our way to what appears to us to be the logical conclusion of our own thinking.
Mm-hmm. I actually understand that, Barris. I feel really smart.
I'm sorry. You know, when I close my eyes, I'm meandering through these avenues in my brain.
I can see you walking down the streets of your brain when your eyes close and finding the next turn. So I love it. I love seeing it.
But inevitably, the outcome is that it allows us to manipulate and put people in boxes in which they don't actually fit, but we believe that they fit. And when we do that, what inevitably happens is we lock other people into the place where we think they belong. In other words, we're all on a journey, but we give ourselves permission to change, but we don't give the other person the permission to journey through change to what they may be or may become. It's not really character assassination, but it's like assassination of their ability in our eyes to change.
No, it's exactly true. And the reason the brain has, see, these are things the brain has to do, Barris, because it does not have the gospel. You see, the gospel would tell you what everybody is: righteous, holy, perfect, and redeemed. Let's start there. But if you do not have that understanding of absolute truth, your brain has no way to identify people. So your brain searches for its own identification system. And labeling is really the only way that we can do it. But at the same time, it marginalizes and dismisses the person.
Well, it allows you to move past them, which has that
exactly.
effect, yes.
So, which takes away...
I said that with my eyes open, by the way.
I know you did. Now, there's a difference. Now, Barris wanted to do a show on how we do the show. So let me tell you that when Barris closes his eyes, I'm listening intently because I know he's wandering around in his brain. I can see the street lights in his brain to the left, to the right. There's a car parked in the way. Now we got to walk around here. It's down this alley. Oh, yeah, that's right. It was down this alley. But now when he closes his eyes, but when he turns his head to the right and stares upward and in the distance, I'm in trouble.
Oh, this is scary.
He is coming after me. He's coming after me.
I'm even getting scared of myself right now. I'm scared.
Now, I'm just happy all the time, and you can't read my face.
Yeah, but by your own admission, you spent a couple of decades practicing that.
Oh, dear Lord, yes. You do have to do that.
Took me a second, but I got there.
I'm a practice deceiver.
Okay, getting back to how the show runs.
What we were talking about.
Well, no, you were talking about the dark back alleys of my...
We were talking about you. That was the problem.
You were talking about the dark back alleys of my mind, and frankly, there's very few people I let back there alive.
Oh, I didn't say I was going there. I was watching you go there. I don't want to go there.
So, tell me, it's a Powercast. Used to be a webcast. How was the Powercast named?
Well, I do what I'm told, Barris. I don't have a clue.
Now, by the way, I've already spoken to Jeff this morning at length.
Yeah.
At length. So any porky pies from you, buddy, for those who don't understand rhyming slang from Australia, any lies from you, and I have a backup tape here. So how was the Gospel Revolution Powercast named?
I don't know.
Oh, I've scared you out of even answering anything. Oh, dear. No, I should have said that at the end.
I told you. I don't know. I just do what I'm told. How was it? I'm sure somebody made that decision somewhere along the line.
Well, according to Jeff, you did. In fact, according to Jeff, you and he made it almost in the same second.
Well, really possible.
Now, huh?
That's really possible. I forget many of the wonderful things that I do. I've been listening to Donald Trump too much. I'm sorry.
You are a sad loss to politics, my friend. Now, the next, and I'm going to bring Jeff in on this conversation because I'm not sure if I can believe you or not. I want to just gather you up and cuddle you and believe everything that's said. I don't think I can. I just don't see. Now, the next question I want to ask is, why do we oppose Christianity? I want you to answer this, if you can, in 30 seconds, and after that I'm going to cut you off.
The final decision to break away from Christianity.
See, now, right there. You want to talk about a final decision, and I'm asking you why.
Well, I'm going to tell you why. You just won't listen. It's one of your better qualities.
Oh, jeez.
We began to cut away from Christianity. Oh, we began to do that many, many years ago. But the final decision actually came. I was watching our friend, Franklin Graham. He was contradicting whether or not someone was a Christian. He said, this is what a Christian is. You have to repent, believe, accept, obey. And I, sitting on the sofa, and I said, well, I now know for sure I am not a Christian.
Because?
Because I know that you do not have to repent, you do not have to obey, you do not have to believe.
What is it with Christianity that says, if you obey, that proves you're a Christian, instead of, I mean, like, you would not say if somebody barked, they were a dog. You'd say, if you're a dog, you barked.
Mm-hmm.
But Franklin and
his
cohorts...
But if you don't bark, it doesn't make you not a dog.
Yeah. Wow. Really?
Yeah. I always go deeper, Paris.
I'm up the back alleys again. I'm sorry.
We did not approach this in any flippant way or any way handled it lightly at all. Now, those that have been in the gospel revolution, I've been comparing Christianity to the gospel for 3 decades now. I went back and listened to my series on the great high priest.
Mm-hmm. Great series.
Yes, it is. And
anyone who's listening to this, you can get that on our YouTube channel, which is Gospel Revolution 1. That is the digit 1, Gospel Revolution and the number 1. Go there and get this. This is priceless stuff. This was how long ago, mate?
More than 20 years ago now. Now, I didn't want to say that because now when you look at that video, I still look just the same. I haven't changed at all. That way nobody will recognize me on the street ever again.
I'm just shaking my head. There's nothing else I can do.
Barris does that too. He closes his eyes and wanders through the alleys. He also stares into the distance, which means I am in trouble. And he also just shakes his head. And he shrugs his shoulders.
There's a lot of that.
He just shrugs his shoulders.
I'm going to turn the video off if you keep up with this.
Listen, we're going to tell them how the PowerCast, I'm going to tell them my perspective of how this PowerCast goes.
Tell them how I dress.
That is not for public consumption. There's just no. right now, you are very nicely dressed, actually. You got on a nice button-down shirt. And it's got a collar on it. But normally we don't have those. But no, this departure from Christianity it was very well thought out. We talked about it amongst ourselves. I heard everyone out.
who was amongst ourselves? Who was ourselves?
Well, it was between you and I. We had lengthy discussions about it. It was.
But that was after you. You'd made that change.
I'd already drug you into it. You wanted to ask me to help you really get on board with it. You were very diplomatic about how you approached it.
When I first started listening to the, I think it was a webcast at that time, there was a couple of things I had real problems with, and that was one of them. Why do you want to alienate the people you're trying to reach was the way I saw it, and I hate that I got on board so quickly. makes me wonder
I'm just
how shallow I am.
I'm just that charming. Oh, no, don't blame yourself, Paris. I'm just that charming.
Oh,
gosh, I have been listening to Trump too much.
The next thing I expect to hear you say is,
huge. Of course, it's huge.
Huge. It's of course you huge. Like me. You're only human. Quickly, and I think I asked you for this answer in 30 seconds.
And I did, and then you asked more questions after that.
Okay, just to I want to take this one even further because I was sent this interesting link this week, and I thought, oh wow, this was from Christianity Today. Tell the folks what Christianity Today is, magazine.
It's a magazine.
Yeah, you're f***ing hopeless. It is a magazine for Christians about the cutting edge of where Christianity is.
Well, that's what the title says, Barris.
No, I'm telling you what to say.
I'm not going to say it. You already said it. That's another thing that happens on this show. I run so far behind, and I lag behind. Sometimes Barris just has to stop and say this, Mike. Which we edit all that out, but we're not going to edit this out.
Oh, shoot. Okay. So, Christianity Today, which is a magazine for Christians on the... Oh, I've already said that, haven't I? has an article called Seven Lies Christians Tell. We mean well, but is the truth really on our lips when we evangelize? By Tony Kriz, or Kriz, K-R-I-Z. And here he talks about walking into rooms and putting this up to a room full of people, and never has anyone ever denied it. Lie number one. We lie when we claim, this is a Christian talking to Christians about the way they evangelize. We lie when we claim we are more confident than we really are. Two, we lie when we claim that unexplainable things are in fact explainable. The Trinity, for example, is not as simple as a metaphor of water, ice, water, and steam, or an egg, shell, white, and yolk. Sometimes I think we would be better off if we just said, these ideas are so beyond me that if God did reveal them to me, I'm pretty sure my brain would explode. I like this guy because he's telling the truth. Lie number three, we lie when we don't acknowledge our doubts within the drama of faith. Now, the way I've put this myself on my own blogs is, when Christianity can't explain things in cold logic, they then resort to the, it's a mystery. Like prayer. Did you pray? Yes. Did God answer it? No. God works in mysterious ways. Or, did you pray? Yes. Did God answer? Yes. Praise God. I mean, it doesn't matter which way you go.
Did he answer? Yes. He said no.
Yeah, there you go. Four, we lie when we pretend like the Bible doesn't say some really nasty things when in fact it does. For instance, God says, happy is the one who seizes your infants and dashes them against the rocks. Psalm 137, verse 9. Lie number five, we lie when we claim we understand other beliefs, faiths, and worldviews. Now, you really need to go to Christianity Today and look up this article. We don't have time to explain it all here, but he's right in this, totally right. You do not understand how a Muslim thinks. Don't pretend you do, and don't, for God's sake, say you do, because you're full of crap. I'm sorry. Just as a Muslim would be, if he walked into one of your, Pentecostal, Word of Faith, Baptist services and decided to write a blog on how he now understands everything about Christianity. I'm sorry, it doesn't hold water. Lie number six, we lie when we claim that all of our beliefs are a 10. Really? He says, was Jesus real and did he rise from the dead? For me, he says, Jesus is a 10. Do I know all the facts of the floating zoo of Noah or whether there was a snake without legs or with legs in the Garden of Eden? He says, that's less than a 10 for me. I don't know. Seven, finally and most importantly, we lie, brackets, insidious and barbaric lying, when we pretend like we really, really, really love the other person when in fact we don't. We wouldn't die for them. We find their stories riveting. We radiate affection. But down deep, they know if they are or are not truly loved. And we lie when we say we do. So that was just something I received this week, Mike, and it sums up part of the reason why we became so disaffected with the idea of calling ourselves Christians, because essentially, with 40,000 brands of Christians, we just don't find ourselves in that milieu. We just don't find ourselves in that group. We don't find ourselves in that mindset. Our mindset is
that we are all one and that all are perfect, righteous, and holy. You know, Bears, he's only affirming what I've said for many years about Christianity. To be a really good Christian, you must be a liar. He just said that all, he could walk in any room and all of them would lie about all of these things.
Yes.
Well, number one, he's affirming that what I decreed about Christianity was true, that you have to lie to be. You cannot be a good Christian without lying. You just can't be. The other conundrum that we have here is Christian belief. And that is that all liars go to hell. So we now have confirmed that all Christians are going to hell.
Oh, gosh.
Why would I want to be a Christian? They're all going to hell because they all lie. Now these are nice people that lie. These are good people that lie. I lied. And you have to lie. You have to lie about preaching and sharing the gospel. You have to lie about evangelizing. You have to lie about prayer. Probably the number one thing that people lie about is prayer. Do they pray, number one, and will you pray for me? Yes, I'll pray for you.
Of course I'll pray. Who's going to say no?
Yes, and who's going to actually do it then? Now,
yeah, really. How often did you do it?
I did it often, but not every time I said that I was going to do it. I really appreciate this guy being able to be honest with himself. You know, this was more than pointing out about other Christians. This was really seven points of self-honesty. And because he was not saying this just about others, he was saying it about himself. And in realizing it about himself, he knew that others all fit in this same category. We could add numbers and numbers and numbers and numbers and numbers and numbers and numbers to the things that Christians lie about. And not just Christians, but all religious people.
So this started, why do we oppose Christianity? Have we explained that?
We oppose, we've said why we departed from it. We oppose it because it claims the name of Jesus, yet every doctrine it has is an antithesis to the work of the cross. And nobody else does this, preaches their doctrines in the name of Jesus, and claim his authority to their beliefs.
Now, we do this podcast by video. We do our talking together by video. Has its problems. Like you can see me going up the back alleys of my mind. And sometimes, depending on our connection or our bandwidth speed, now not always, but sometimes we have to reconnect.
Start over. Well, we don't have to start all over again. We have to simply reboot and pick up where we left off. At least we don't lose what we have done when we do have to reboot.
Which brings me to how we actually talk. We talk via Skype. We tried Google chats. We've tried Uvu. Of course, for what we need and where we are, it seems to be the best.
We've done video conferencing. Goodness, there's been actually several that we've used.
We have.
Yeah.
We have. Next thing I wanted to touch on was criticism. Now
we do not handle criticism, so stop.
Now, we've had criticism. You're not going to induce us into political commentary because
it just isn't a gospel issue.
There are so many ways for us to get tied up with peripherals or go down rabbit holes that don't have any real benefit to anyone. Now, recently we were criticized regarding talking too much about sex, talking too much about homosexuality, talking too much anti-Christianity. If you detect that we are raising those topics for any other reason than simply pointing out what the gospel is by comparison, We welcome your criticism, but don't criticize us for talking about things. For example, in the last 3 weeks, 1,000 pastors in the USA have had to forfeit their positions because of a hack to the Ashley Madison sex site. If you think that that is talking about sex too much, I'm sorry. You don't know where we're coming from. And we don't want to criticize anyone or anything. For example, last week we talked about Kim Duke, the Kentucky...
Kim Davis,
thanks. The Kentucky county clerk who refuses to sign any gay marriage licenses. Not certificates, licenses. And we just refuse to get into that thing because... Now, I will on my own website. I'll tell you right now that Mike and I, about 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, there was a topic we covered about how free we are to speak our own minds on our own websites. Now, on my own website, there are things that you might find that I will never, ever post on the Gospel Revolution. Not because I'm embarrassed, not because I'm two-faced.
You should be embarrassed.
Oh, you said embarrassed, like B-E-R-E-S. Oh, that's good. That's very funny.
I know.
Okay. But we're not going to go there. We are not going to go down rabbit holes that are needless for us to explore when we have so much in a world that needs the gospel so much.
Now, if you think it's not tempting, oh my gosh!
Oh please!
I've got opinions. Varys is the most opinionated person I've ever met in my life. No, I wouldn't. I've got opinions. Jeff has opinions. But you see, and you might say, "Well, you're free. Why don't you?" Well, we on our own individual basis decide what filters we put on ourselves. There is not a standard that the Gospel Revolution sets for anybody in this place. We simply talk about the issue. I have the filter on myself that I choose. Barris has the filter on himself that he chooses, and Jeff has the filter on himself that he chooses. We don't have a protocol for that. Now, we will talk about it.
And in that talking about it together, we get to gauge each other's comfort zones, and we choose to move as one.
And we do. It really is. And we're doing that more and more and better. That's why Bear says, you know, why are we going to do this next week? It's going to be better. But you see, we never find this place where we are content with where we are. Mm. We're comfortable where we are, but we're not content. And we constantly want to do this better. We constantly want to relate to you better and to relate to each other better. We want to relate to the gospel better. And we want to magnify the Lord. I'm giving a plug now for Gainesville, Georgia. We're all in process. Let me tell you something we're not in process of. We are not in process of becoming holy. We're not in the process of becoming righteous. We're not in the process of becoming accepted. We're not in the process of becoming redeemed. We're not in the process of getting saved. Now, the saving of the soul is another subject. And that's what we're going through. And the other process that we are in is releasing that which is within us, and by virtue of doing that, helping you to release what's already there. We're not trying to get something into you. The reason I am comfortable but not content is because I take great comfort in knowing that you know everything. Folks, I really believe that. Your heart knows it all. You don't know you know it all, and we don't either. But we together are wanting to magnify the Lord. The soul is where all of this determination of how you approach life and how life is processed is done in the soul. It's not done in the spirit.
You know, okay, so you keep bringing up this subject that you're speaking on in Gainesville.
And I got it on my mind, Bears. Can't help it.
I know, and I wanted to talk about that because that really colors these podcasts and how we do them. What was it that Mary said? I will magnify.
My soul doth magnify the Lord.
It's like whatever you're full of, you're going to speak about. Mm-hmm. So when we talk on this podcast, when we share our thoughts or our ideas or anything, what we're sharing is not just the decades of experience or the decades of quote-unquote learning that we may or may not have, but we are full of whatever it is that we are currently digesting, that we're currently... For example, right now, I'm currently digesting a book that I'm writing with Randy French. I'm also currently digesting this concept of antinomianism and anomianism. And so my comments are probably going to betray the fact that this is where I'm grazing. This is where I'm feeding.
Yeah, we can't keep from it.
Same with you. Hey, Mike, somebody wrote in and asked what equipment we use. What equipment do you use in this PowerCast?
I use a laptop, and I use a headset with a microphone on it, and I use a camera that is not the one that comes with your laptop. It's a plug-in camera, a Logitech. And so that's pretty much the extent of it. Of course, my Ethernet cord to make sure we've got a good solid connection to the internet.
We're both running on Comcast. I think we're both running on 75 down and 10 up, and I think you're running on the same thing, except that you've had some problems internally in the house. My equipment that I use here is I run three PCs. With those three machines, on one I am running the running sheet, which keeps me up to what I need to talk about or ask about, and sometimes we both have a running sheet, and sometimes... Mostly,
we run right off the sheet.
we run off the sheet and down a rabbit hole. Mostly, I just run the running sheet myself. Sometimes, if it's kind of complicated or complex, I'll send a copy to Mike. Then the second machine is a machine that's dedicated to nothing else but recording using Adobe Audition 3. I'm looking at turning that to something that only uses maybe on Linux or it's a Windows 7. All my machines are Windows 7 right now. I'll probably be upgrading to Windows 10, but Windows 7 with Adobe Audition, and I'm going to try and maybe switch that out to Linux using Audacity, another sound recording program. On the third machine I have, it's purely and simply for playing clips in the show. We've used this once or twice, hasn't been perfect. I'm also finding that it's possible to do this on a tablet, so we're just finding out about that now. Now, if you compare some of the later PowerCasts to the very earliest ones, you'll find a huge quality difference, and what I put that down to is both the equipment I'm using and the help of somebody who has just made everything way, way easier than I ever deserved it to be. I started off using a Samson Gate or a Compander of sorts, and what that does is it gates, it shuts out anything under a certain volume level. Never could get that sucker working, so I've just discarded that, and now I'm using a Behringer Firepower 1616. It's a USB interface between microphones and or any audio input to a multi track recorder. So when we're recording this show, Mike, we are doing it on at least two, sometimes three, and rarely four different soundtracks. And then we're mixing those soundtracks together later down into one track and doing some sound enhancement on it from there. My system at the moment simply is a really good, I wanted to get a Bob Heil mic, $600 worth, and I just couldn't justify it. So I did some tests and found an Audio-Technica mic. It was called a 100 USB. It's a USB mic, goes straight in, like yours, Mike. It goes straight into a USB port, but the difference is that yours simply goes in and gives you sound out and sound in, whereas mine records every different input to a different track. That enables me now to separate out all of the sound effects and sound artifacts and the things that I don't want, can cut them out separately from our individual signals and then put it out. This Audio-Technica mic, by the way, it costs me under $100, and it is, originally we were using an SM58, a Shure mic. This thing is really quite a deal better and actually cheaper than buying a new Shure mic. So that's the hardware I'm using currently. But it really has to be said that most of my smarts, now I've been doing sound work now for several years, 15 years, but most of the improvements to this PowerCast have come from none other than Randy French. Randy has been dealing with sound for 30 years, was a sound manager for a huge church, and has done sound work for some people that you wouldn't believe if we told you. Just most recently, he was doing some recording and sound editing for one of the presidential candidates, and this man is gifted and knowledgeable. And when he talks, I feel like some kind of kindergarten person. But thanks to him, we've improved. In my opinion, we've improved our sound quality 300 or 400 or 500%, and it's been. And thank you, Randy. Thank you so much. At the beginning of the show, Michael, we say good morning, and at the end of the show, we say good night. What the hell is all that about?
It is the art of deception. That's what that is all about. We hardly know, and many times you've heard us say good morning, good evening at the beginning or at the end, and. But we record our regularly scheduled programming time is 9 a.m. on Monday mornings.
So don't ring us then.
Well, if you do, we both turn our phones off pretty much. And so I get all these calls later. What's wrong with your phone? It doesn't even go to answering service. I thought something was wrong with you and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, you just got to get used to it. So that's our regularly scheduled time. Of course, the broadcast time that we actually – broadcast the show is in the evening on Thursday. And Jeff is as punctual as we will allow him to be in producing that.
He is so patient with me, I gotta tell you.
And you, if you think Jeff is hairy now, you don't know how hairy he can get if he gets the delay on the PowerCast. He wants that out on time. But he, you know, Jeff wants to do his work with excellence. So,
like he says, people expect this at a certain time, and I want to give it to him then.
Yeah, he's very conscious of that, and I greatly appreciate that too. You know, especially during this last number of years, there were times that just getting out of bed was just a great effort. I've actually got on the phone knowing that this was going to change Barris's week, and I've asked if we can wait until tomorrow or because some business thing come up, but Barris has the same liberty with me. We both know we're going to need that occasionally, so we are both very gracious. I'm just glad we both need it, because if it was only Barris, I would just absolutely rake him over to coals for delaying this.
I'm the boss, and don't you forget it. Do you like working here?
So we both have this same need to change the times. This is a big difference from doing the live show. I will admit there's been some elements that have been lost in doing a live show, especially with Glenn Klein. Now, there's a big difference between a pre-recorded and produced show and a live show. Now, there's some things lost in having a live show. I'm telling you, the term extraordinaire comes out of Glenn Klein's mouth probably on a daily basis, and I'll have to tell you that he is a broadcaster extraordinaire.
He is. In fact, some people are made for the radio studio, and he's one of them.
He definitely is, and definitely has a real talent for that. And we really appreciate Glenn's contribution. It was we wouldn't be where we are today if Glenn had not done what he did.
He jumped in back in the dark ages, or at least in what was one of our dark ages, at least. And just what did he do?
Well, it was very consistent about broadcasting this show.
How many weeks did he miss?
There was maybe 1 week, and that was a sports event that he had to go to.
Well, 1 week out of 3 weeks would be bad. How many weeks was it? How many years was it?
Six years.
He'd missed 1 week in 6 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And so, oh my gosh, now, there was a period of time where Glenn took a break and Greg Amberge took over and did a good job for us hosting the show.
But when Glenn said he'd be there, he'd be there. I mean, with that kind of reliability.
We produced a great show, and when he couldn't be there, he arranged for who was going to be there during a few weeks that he took off. And with that, this show got off the ground. Now, the live show had many things that that's going to be lost by producing a show, but by producing a show, we gain many things that just could not be done on a live show.
Yeah.
When Barris first took this position to do this, his greatest angst was the thought that he was going to have to get to a point to where that he could produce a live show. And the more we did this, the more I liked it. I know the benefits and the drawbacks of doing a live show. I know the benefits now by experience of doing a recorded and produced show. And the drawbacks to that also. So there's positive and negatives on both sides. And so finally, I started making these rumblings to Barris. It's like, well, Barris, don't be in such a hurry. I'm okay right now with this. And finally, we had the conversation, and just I came to the conclusion that this is the way we should go, that this produced, recorded and produced show is the best thing that we can do. That way we can, anytime we do say something that is too off-colored politically, too off-colored sexually, too off-colored in any way, we have a couple of filtering systems, and one is me, the other is Barris, and the final filtering system is Jeff. So if anything gets through that offends you, don't call us. Call Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah, he was the last gatekeeper. Make him work for his living.
Exactly. So we have built into this ways that The things that were difficult about having a live show, we have gone extra steps to eliminate the things that would have caused the live show to be more difficult. And we've tried our best. Barris has applied himself tremendously to trying to produce something that is entertaining, informative. Barris is not a stranger to things like this and has some experience in it. And so, you know, when you hear a jingle, which we started hearing, a lot of people didn't like the jingles. And I don't think that it was that they didn't like the jingles. We just started becoming – Barris lives in Nashville, and how he got so countrified so fast, he had to have been countrified before he got here.
Oh, I'm talking 30 years before ever I got here.
Folks are dumb where I come from.
Oh, man.
Oh, goodness. So, yes.
Forgot about that. I'm going to have to play it now.
Oh, no. Oh, see, I bring up my own demons here.
But our roles are quite specific, and yet they overlap. I record this show and produce it. Mike proofs it. And Jeff is the final proofer. That means that it goes through three layers of and let me say this. Jeffrey can call me. He called me last week and said, "You really shouldn't. Can you change this or cut that?" I said, "Why?" And he said it. And I said, "Well, why am I asking? It doesn't matter, mate.
Yeah, you got to do it anyway.
You are the final proofer. Whatever you say, I'm going to do it."
Exactly.
And
that's the nice thing about this. We trust each other to where there's really not debate about what each of us feels should do. It's like, I hope that tone has been set by all of us, really. But we have a trust that the best intent of the person is in mind for the people out there. Anytime that Barris sees that the best intent for the people is not there and something I'm going for, he speaks up about it. If I see it, I speak up about it. If Jeff sees it, he speaks up about it. But it's because we want each other to speak up about it. We don't mind having it pointed out. Have you thought about what this sounds like when... Now, do we catch it all? We don't catch it all. But we catch it all when we don't catch it all.
Hey, Mike, how long have we known each other?
I remember one of my first contacts with you, Barris, on a phone call. It has to be now about 7 years ago or so.
Wow. It could be just that.
Yeah, and I was thrilled. And then I forgot about you.
I'm eminently forgettable.
Now, had I ever seen that face, I would have never forgotten you. But I didn't see your face. After we spoke, I remembered there was a gentleman from Australia who was a pastor who had been profoundly impacted by my teachings. And that we had a phone conversation. You were telling me about that, and I don't remember. It's been probably 7 years ago. Then there was a long period of time that you became just that pastor from that I didn't know his name anymore. How we reconnected, I don't remember. I think it was you're listening to the webcast and getting involved in that as a listener occasionally.
I did. One week I rang up and I think I quoted the American slave Freer, who said that. Wish I could remember a name right now. had to have been a magnificent woman. And she said, if I could have convinced more slaves to understand that they were slaves, I could have freed so many more thousands of slaves. And that was the last time I, as far as I remember, the next time that I had meaningful input to the GR was that Jeffrey and I, Jeff Robertson and I, we had spoken with each other for months. He and I just became friends almost outside of the gospel revolution. And one week we were just chatting. He said, oh, gosh, it looks like we're going to lose our webcast. And I thought about that. I called him back a day later and I said, well, you don't have to lose the webcast. We can send something out next week. And
I remember that.
And so, so you must have thought, oh, heck. Yeah, free labor is always just that. It's as cheap as chips and bad. But I said, I'm pretty sure we can. So what I did was I produced a couple of shows that were the best of the best of the webcasts that preceded it. And I think, I may be wrong here, Mike, but I think the next, this is 3.5 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
Three years ago. It was, I think, in June, July. The next thing I heard was Mike would like, Jeff calls me and says, Mike would like you to interview him or something?
I don't remember. We did not miss a show.
Never missed a show.
Yeah.
And I'm just so happy about that because it takes years to develop something like this, and the effort and the integrity that Glenn put into this show, and you, it would have been awful to see that lost. Mike, let's talk about questions. We have a saying here, and that is that questions are
the lifeblood of the gospel revolution.
And I didn't have to wave my hands or do anything.
Didn't have to close his eyes, stare into the distance, shrug his shoulders, or not.
Now we've had people who send in regular questions. We've had Pastor Ted. By the way, he's out of hospital. He had some surgery just in the last couple of weeks, and it looks like he's progressing pretty well, according to Pastor Pat Winsett, his wife. But there was Pastor Ted, and we will still put to air any questions that come in from anybody.
Any kind of question, too. It just doesn't make any difference what it is.
That's good, yeah. Pastor Ted asks questions based on his own congregation's interests.
Yes.
Now, here is a guy. He's one of very few people we know who are pastoring a church and preaching the gospel. And that doesn't mean they preach all the gospel because, it's like an old story about a farmer or a preacher, and the preacher, there's only one guy that turns up in his church one day, and the preacher says, what should I do? And the farmer says, well, if I was feeding the cattle, I'd feed them even if there was only one. And so the pastor gets up and preaches this lengthy sermon and does his stuff. And after he gets down, he says to the farmer, he says, how did I do? And he says, well, look, if I did feed only one cow, I wouldn't feed him all of my feed. So that's a bit like some of our pastors. They share the gospel as they see, and this is wisdom, let me tell you. They share the gospel as they see their own people will accept and ruminate and enjoy and be edified by it. And that is a true shepherd. Questions. I miss our good friend Moses Garter. Moses, but he's always there with something. And, we had a question from him, I think, in the last couple of weeks. Moses is the center of our operations in Kenya. And this hasn't been because, look, if we've lost the questions from these regular contributors, it isn't because of anything else except possibly my own lack of application. But if you want to send a question in, and we thoroughly recommend you do, we recommend you call area code 234, phone number 5640971, and leave your question. Once again, if you have any questions, and questions are...
again, the lifeblood of the Gospel Revolution.
Call area code 234-564-0971. Now, there's a story about that number. I searched high and low. It's a Skype number, which is in my name. And I searched high and low to find a number that was 123456. I would have gone up to 12 if I could have, but that's where it ran out. And it came, you're not going to believe this, mate. The number is based in Lima, Ohio, which is the birthplace of my wife. I mean, what the heck?
And McKinley High School.
I don't even know.
Glee.
There you go, the old McKinley High School. And she says, she assures me that McKinley was an intermediate school or something, and there was a high school there, but that was all made up. But, hey, what can I say? It's on TV. It must be real.
So we actually have someone who went to McKinley High. Or
we
McKinley
do.
McKinley School.
McKinley Knee High, maybe. Now, the second number that we talk about a lot here is Jeff's number. Now, let's tell the folks, we have 1, 2, 3, 4 office locations of the Gospel Revolution. We have the studio here in Nashville, Tennessee, which is probably last on the list. We have you at Houston, Texas, and your name and number are on our website should people want to call you, and I'm not going to put it out on this podcast except to say that it is there on the website. We have... I'm gonna prioritize here. If I put myself last, and you're second last, I'd say the third last important office site would be Jeff. Now, Jeff, don't kill me here. Last time I said something like this, you didn't talk to me for 5 weeks, and I can't afford to be out of touch with you, fella. So, and I'm gonna, and he's in. Oh, it was Lake Panochikochiwachi, but it's not anymore. What is it now, mate?
I actually don't.
You don't know either.
He's in Wildwood, Florida.
Wildwood, Florida.
Yes. Unless it's some small suburb outside of Wildwood.
Did you call him a Wildwood flower?
No, I didn't.
I will. I'm not afraid of the lad.
I'm going to leave that to you.
Yeah, I guess you saw my eyes rolling back in my head and going up the back alleys of my mind there. Mm-hmm. His number is area code 321. 220-4373, and honestly, you really should ring him. The guy, frankly, he's got too much time in his hands, and we are of the single opinion that he needs a lot more to fill in his in his time. He's the guy. Now, Jeff, Mike does nothing. He just sits in his living room. I've been there with him. I've seen this. Mm-hmm. He sits in his living room and just waits around for phone calls that hardly ever come.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to tell you what I do.
No, it's illegal.
It's totally illegal. And Jeff Triss is about the place, checking out for alligators down there.
Walking around under the Spanish moss.
That's what he does. He sent me a box of it. He sent me a box of Spanish moss, mate. He did.
Did he debug it first?
Oh, no. Is that why it died? Oh, crikey.
Moss is full of bugs. That was a attempt to kill you.
Oh, man. I try to treat him so well, but it's going to be hard from now on. And, of course, the number one office location. Now, he, Jeffrey, is the admin. We call him the superlative secondary admin officer of the GR, which is a very long acronym to put on his business cards, but we call him that.
And other things.
But our number one, without this person, it would never work, I'm telling you. I'm sure it would never work because I wouldn't get paid and I'd go, oh, man.
And it has been this way for 40 years.
Is Mrs. Hazel, or is it Miss, what does she want to be called? Miss Hazel?
She's Hazel Williams.
Oh, you aren't even going to. See, that's it. She was your wife, and you're still not game to put any.
Well, she's the only wife I will have ever had, that's for sure.
But is she Mrs. or Miss? Or Ms?
I'm not sure how she signs her name.
Okay, maybe I've just got to get her on the phone and find out.
You'll have to ask. Inquiring minds are Snoopy.
A spooky?
Snoopy.
If I'm Snoopy, you're Charlie Brown, buddy.
Hey, I've been Charlie Brown for a long time.
Now, listen, what is all this about producers, associate producers, sponsors, and, I don't know, non-sponsors or whatever?
These are the levels of contribution that people choose of their own volition, from their own heart, as God instructs, as they feel condemned to do, threatened to do.
Manipulated.
we don't care what motivates you to do it. We just want you to do it.
Gimme. So, my name's Jimmy.
You know, I almost wish that were true. I've talked more people out of giving. Jeff won't let me on the phone with somebody about a contribution.
Smart lad.
Barris encourages Jeff not to let me on the phone with somebody. because I have to qualify, quantify, validate, and verify that there's only one single reason on planet Earth that you're giving. And after we've eliminated all of the reasons other than you just want to, and you've got the money, if I have any concept in my heart that you are low on funds, I will ask you to please don't do that. Pay your bills.
You know what? National Public Television in America are responsible for Sesame Street, that show that has absolutely traversed the whole world, and they go for pledges. But Michael Williams could never hold down a job at National Public Television USA. Couldn't
they
do it.
They would fire me.
The man is an idiot. All right.
And even back in the old days, Barris, when I had other opinions about motivations for people to give, I'd forget about it. I just could not. My mind is so one track. I'm such a simple-minded man that the ability to remember to take up an offering at the end of the meeting, along with be excited about the gospel too, just couldn't run in one breath.
You still do it. You still do it. I've seen it happen. You still forget to take up an offering.
Oh, my.
Well, let me explain a bit about these levels. Every new donor to the Gospel Revolution, the first thing they get is a pharisectomy certificate. Now, this is a certificate to show to all and sundry that their inner Pharisee has been removed with surgical precision by the master and teacher himself, Michael Williams. And then the next level is that every monthly pledge of between $10 and $50 will be awarded with an official sponsor certificate. This certificate, it's printed out on great parchment paper, generally enclosed in a very cheap Chinese frame, and sent out. But it's something which is good, because we believe that everybody needs acknowledgement for the good that they've done. And I'm telling you, when you send out any level of pledge to the Gospel Revolution, you're not saying you want to support us. I'm going to tell you that right now. You're not saying you want to support Hazel in the office with all the mailing outs. You're not saying you want to preserve the preserve of Jeffrey Robertson down there where he does the pledge drive call-outs. And let me tell you something. Ain't nobody in this ministry could do what Jeff does.
Very true.
Pledge drive coming up next month. You're going to probably know exactly what he does when he calls you. Please answer the phone. At least have the internal fortitude to answer the phone and say, look, Jeff, I don't want to give you anything this month. That's what I do now. I tell people, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do it. I just don't feel like it, and I don't feel guilty. If there's anything this gospel does for you, for crying out loud, ain't no guilt in anything you do.
Yeah.
Now, every monthly pledge of over $50 a month, and, you know, we're starting between 10 and 50. We'll get you started as an official sponsor of the Gospel Revolution. And it's $1 a day. I mean, it's $1 a day. Please tell me that you don't waste more than that on other stuff. But every monthly pledge over that, over $50 a month, is going to be awarded with an official producer certificate. Now, these are real producerships, and unlike some that you'll find in Hollywood, we will authenticate and endorse these producerships whenever we're asked to. You can put producer on your business card and use its authentic value wherever these real endorsements are accepted, including places like LinkedIn, where they are really, we've been told by some people, they really make a difference. Every monthly pledge of over $150 a month or $1,800 annually will be awarded with an official executive producer certificate. An executive producer certificate. These carry the same weight as the producer certificates, and we're hearing that they, like I said, they attract a lot of attention when used on your business card and in resume sites. So that is a little bit about when you hear us say, we heard today from Victor Brennan, executive producer. An executive producer is somebody who makes a show possible. An executive producer, just look them up on Wiki, and you'll see why we want to acknowledge the people who are so very generous to us. Why aren't all donors on that list, mate?
Yeah, we do have contributors who do not want to be on any list, and we respect that. So it's out of honoring them that they are not on there, instead of dishonoring them that they are not on there. We do have more contributors than what the list shows, and that's to the respect of those who have requested. Now, Barris, one thing that I think a lot of people would like to know, and I'd like to know myself, you always open this show with a quote that you don't ever warn me about, that's for sure. And but where do you come up with all of this? Is this from those back alleys of that gloriously infused brain with the Holy Ghost?
You mean ADD brain?
That one too.
Okay. Good question. As I was starting to produce a show, I went into wanting to produce a show that was like it had a lot of variety in it, a variety show they used to be called in the old days, which is why I developed jingles and played a lot of music. I want the show to be something which has some continuity to it every week. People are going to listen to something kind of the same as last week but different. And so what I did was I started this one week, and I don't know when or where it started. I only know that I now do it every week. I Google, if you want to know how I do it, I Google religion in quote or religion in quotation. And I just got to tell you, mate, there's no shortage. Starting with Mark Twain and moving outwards, there is just no shortage of people who want to share their brain about religion. So that's where that comes from.
Now, the jingles that you produce, I kind of know about these, but why don't you tell the folks how this comes about?
Well, I'm a muso at heart, and I was a worship leader for many years in Christianity, in churches of varying sizes and shapes and belief structures. But I just like the idea. I really got interested in a show called The No Agenda Show about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe longer. And it is a show that deals with all manner of things, but it was the format of the show that I really liked. And I started off trying to emulate that concept where there were jingles and there was a kind of a fast-moving format. Now, in what we do, you can't really do a fast-moving format because we get pretty deeply into issues that, I mean, how do you get a fast-moving format and try to expound the Greek of a set passage? You just can't do it. So I'm learning as I go, and recently we have dropped a lot of jingles and music simply because we are experimenting with different formats for our show. What we want to do is make this show as attractive as possible to the widest possible audience. And also, there was a lot of work that went into the production of the show originally, which I'm able to divest myself of as a result of making these changes. Now, call it lazy if you like, but I sure do enjoy the laziness. But what we're after is, hey guys, if you like the jingles, if you like the music, write in and let us know. If you don't, write in and let us know. And if you don't, give a rat.
I'm letting you talk through this one. They're your jingles. So.
Just be yourself. If you don't give a rat's, just be yourself, because you're still loved, holy, righteous, and perfect. I just don't.
Isn't that amazing? I'll never get tired of making that statement, Bears. We will. One thing that will never leave this show is the assertion and repetition of that statement, regardless of who we're talking about, whether it's Martin Luther, Hitler, whether it's the Clintons, the Bushes, the Obamas, the one thing that we will constantly bring the focus back to is that we are righteous, holy, and perfect in the eyes of God, without fault, without blame.
Beautifully said.
That we want to. Now, one of the I've got a selfish reason for doing that, Paris, because I came to understand that God himself had set this revelation up to where that unless I accept it for everyone, I will never be able to see it for myself.
Mm. Mm. Michael, pledge drives. Talk to us about that.
Well, it's the term drive. You got to see somebody with a whip and driving cattle and...
Oh, Jeffrey, I see it already.
He's out there with the whip driving the cattle. That's a pledge drive. You know, they used to have cattle drives. Now we have pledge drives.
He's out there driving the cattle. You sure? You want me to put that to air?
Why not? So, we searched, you know, in divesting yourself from Christianity, you have to come up with other terminology, you know, just to be able to make your claims of divesting yourself from Christianity valid. So, you know, what do we do? You know, well, we're we're not collecting your offerings. We're not collecting your tithes. We're not doing any of that. So we finally settled on the term pledge drive. I think that was with the input of other gospel revolutionaries, actually. As
you don't ever want to take the blame for yourself, do you?
No.
Okay. Smart man.
Blame somebody else's middle name, not mine. But that's how we came up with this, is trying to come up with a terminology that would not have a connotation of reward. You know, and here again, here I go. We want you to know that there is no spiritual reward in giving. The reward that you get is the way you feel about what you've done. That is a reward. It should be rewarding that you know what we're doing with the money. Goodness, things that we've got going on around the planet. Moses really is more than our point person in Kenya. He's our point person in all of Africa right now. And he is expanding his scope into other countries around Kenya. And he will forever be that person for us.
Using resources he raises there and touching five countries.
Yes, and a lot of that, Barris, is him raising resources there. He planted a garden, and it's like a quarter acre. And he sent me pictures of this. We should have published them. Rows and rows and rows of huge cabbages, twice as big as my head, and that's a big cabbage. And but he sold these and paid for airtime. He used it for a lot of purposes to keep the gospel going out. So,
and in spreading the gospel on a Muslim radio station, he also has Muslims contributing to the gospel.
And a lot of these cabbages have gone to spreading this good news on Muslim and Catholic radio station. We have gotten such response from the Muslim community. I still don't know how to talk about it, Barris. I can only tell you that they are thrilled that they are included and not excluded by the gospel. And that's their number one statement that they make.
Now, during these pledge drives, if I were anyone else, I'd be saying, well, what do they do with the money? Why should I give? And here is the most convincing reason I know to give into the gospel. It's not to support any other country. It's not to support Burma, where we also have an outreach, or Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, who every week puts the gospel to air on a radio station. What our main reason for a pledge drive, firstly, it allows us to continue to get this gospel out. If our pledge drives stop tomorrow, Jeff, myself, and Mike would probably, and I'm thinking probably also Hazel, would probably, we wouldn't miss a heartbeat. We just keep going. But the biggest thing that your contributions do for us is it meets people who are coming out of religion at the same place that you met reality. It's helping those people meet reality. It's helping people who are now stuck in religion come out and say, freedom. Freedom at last.
Yep. And the wonderful thing is you get to define that freedom as you choose. That is not our job to describe what freedom is, because freedom is to each person what freedom is. We have in many cases, thread by thread, unraveled for you and with you the complex and knotted, convoluted carpet of Christianity that has blanketed your life, and it has fallen at your feet. You have watched this doctrine fall to your feet. You know, if you are in this gospel revolution, there's not a single doctrine of Christianity that you hold anymore. They're all gone. Yet, the ability to magnify the Lord, I'm shamelessly plugging my meeting.
Gainesville, Georgia, weekend after next.
The ability to magnify the Lord has gone off the charts. I'm amazed, Paris, that not only have we not forsaken the scriptural principles of Christ, creation, virgin birth, the life of Christ, the death, the burial, the resurrection. We've not only not forsaken them, we see greater reason for their validity. Amen. In bearing about the truth of the gospel. It supports the truth of the gospel. And yet we have divested ourselves of virtually every Christian doctrine. Nobody else has done it except the gospel revolution, to totally divest ourselves of the doctrines of Christianity, yet at the same time hold on to every scriptural principle of creation and recreation.
Michael, what are the future plans for the Gospel Revolution Powercast?
Well, if we raise enough money, I'm just going to cash it in and go to Hawaii.
Oh, are you going to stay at Benny Hinn's mansion there, or is?
Oh, does he have a place there? Why? Well, I don't need the money then. I'll just go stay with Benny.
Oh, there you go. Or Joyce's, or Kenneth's.
I think our plan for the Gospel Revolution is we've laid it out already here, and our goal is the same, and it will remain the same, and that is the need for people to know. It's just like Harriet Tubman, if I could have convinced people they were slaves. You see, some of the things that we say about Christianity is to convince them that they're in something that is not good. We can't speak nice things about something that has people bound.
Uh-huh.
And somebody's got to stand up and say, you know, where you are is a tragedy. This is a tragedy. This is not something good that's happened to you. You may have brought good out of it, but this is a tragedy. Getting involved in Christianity is a tragedy for your life. It is not a blessing. And if we don't say it, nobody, do you realize nobody else is going to say it? I know it's uncomfortable to hear it, but if we don't say it, Barris, who's going to say it?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to say it. The Muslims are going to condemn Christianity. The Buddhists are going to condemn Christianity. Every other religion on the face of the earth is going to condemn Christianity. Atheism condemns Christianity. But you see, we speak the truth about Christianity with the gospel there still maintaining its authority meaning to bring good, with its authority to maintain every integral part of Scripture that there is. I get thoroughly overwhelmed with the concept of where we stand at this moment in time in history, where we've come from. It looks as though, Barris, we are a linchpin for the ages. It looks as though we are the watershed for many hundreds of years of people desperately looking for and trying to find a stable place to stand in the gospel and not be suckered in by all of the spiritual trappings of Christianity. It looks that way. It looks as though we stand in a position to have influence over what's happening on this planet 500 years from now, Barris.
Yeah.
It really looks that way. Now, I'd like to experience a lot of that while I'm alive. And we have. Goodness gracious, we saw the collapse and fall of several major religions that were known to be very oppressive to people and acknowledged, even by Christianity, to be oppressive to people. And without firing a shot, except to just proclaim the truth, the gospel reached into these religions and brought them down.
Mike, at the end of every show, we do a wrap-up. In fact, we do tops and tails on every show, an intro and an outro. And you get to have a word to say, and sometimes I'm almost half inclined to think that what you're trying to do is to back away from my acidic, some of the remarks I've made during this show. It's almost like you say, you're making an apology for me. Is that what's happening?
No, not at all. I might feel the need to, you know, there's people that you introduce and then there's people you have to explain, but...
Yeah, dig your grave. Keep going.
But if I am sounding apologetic, it is not just for you, but it's for me and for the entire gospel revolution, because that's the way this runs. We're in this together. And
So you are apologizing for me?
For you and for me and for Jeff. And
but at times you are apologizing for me.
We apologize for Comcast.
Well, I don't know what to tell you, but this would be, in my opinion, a typical wrap-up or an outro or an ending for the show. And family, thanks so much for being with us in this show. And hang with us, because we are going to be bringing you some pretty interesting stuff on what happened at the very birth of Protestantism. Mm-hmm. Why it happened, how it happened, and who made it happen. October is a pledge month for us, so that is just a couple of weeks away. But right now, it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Don't forget to visit www.theteacherwithin.com and order your copy of Touching Spirit, The Letters of Minno Minicky. I am an Amazon Prime user, and this book is the only 5-star product I've seen on Amazon. Maybe there's others out there, but this is the only one I've seen. It's in the top 1% of all book sales on It is in the top 1% of all book sales on Amazon, and is without question the best book touching authentic spirituality I have ever read, and it's not written from a religious standpoint. You don't know until you're halfway through the book that that's what is being discussed. $1 a week, nothing. I mean nothing, but here at the Gospel Revolution, it can make all the difference for somebody just like you starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. We run a value-for-value model here. Hey, Mike, we didn't talk about that. A value-for-value model, and what we say to people is, if you feel you got value out of this podcast, we ask for your value in return. Is that reasonable?
I think it's very reasonable. And I can tell you one thing. If we got value for value, we would be so wealthy. Now, that's just all there is to it. The people who've moved on from the gospel revolution, who cannot deny that it was the life-changing force, regardless of where they've gone to at this point, their lives have been greatly, greatly benefited. So the value, and the people, we do run a value for value, but you can't afford it.
If you feel that you've received real value from this podcast, then I am asking you, regardless of what he just said, to seriously consider donating $1 a week or $1 a day. Why don't you just call our office on 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey Robertson about what you can do, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. You want to leave a message for Mike or a question for him to answer? Dial area code 234-564-0971. Leave us a voicemail. You can find us on Facebook at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. And thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, all the gospel all the time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. And now it's good night from myself, Barris Bartlett, from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee.
And it's good night. We did it right. Right here in Houston, Texas, from Michael Williams. Thank you, guys. This was a real fun show for me. And we appreciate you so very much. Do remember the pledge drive. Start beginning to purpose in your own heart what you will do. And let that come from the very deepest parts of your gratefulness. We thank you so much. This is so much fun. You can't pay us for what we do because we just have so much fun. And as far as Hazel wondering where she stands about this, whether people stop giving or not, nobody's been giving anything to Hazel for an awful lot of years, and she's still done her job without pay whatsoever. Now, I have to tell you, occasionally I tell her, Hazel, just take the ministry debit card and go take your friends and have dinner there in Olney. But the thing you got to understand about Olney, Illinois, she could take four friends and buy them the nicest meal in town. They'd walk out spending $37. So.
Man, I want to move.
So thank you, Hazel. I don't think I've ever said that just right on a PowerCast, but thank you so much. Thank you for who you are. Thank you for all that you've done for all the people in the gospel revolution who have no clue what you have done. And thank you for loving me.
Woohoo! We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
That's